When most people say ghetto, they mean unrefined, low class, cheap, or inferior, especially when it comes to Black people.
At least until it's co-opted by everybody else and suddenly becomes pop culture.
But we're reclaiming ghetto and rejecting white supremacist norms regarding how we're supposed to look, think, or be.
And we aren't waiting for Black ingenuity to be colonized to celebrate it. Absolute means to the largest degree possible, having unlimited power and influence, or simply unrestrained.
I'm Malcolm.
I'm Sade. And this is... Well, this is my little sister, Lola. She's about to bring it home for y'all. What this is, Lola?
This is... Absolute Ghetto.
Hey guys.
All right, welcome back everyone.
Welcome to the Absolute Ghetto. We're back to bring you guys some more scholarship and celebrating Black ingenuity. And this week we really want to analyze something that we've been noticing has gotten really tense on Black Twitter, social media, the internet. Gender wars are they're at an all-time high right now. And one of the reasons they're at an all-time high, aren't they? And one of the reasons they're at an all-time high is because, unfortunately, in July of this year, two very popular artists, Megan Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez, were in an incident together after a party that was filled with lots of alcohol where Megan ended up getting shot. She was injured in the shooting, basically. We want to sort of take a step back from, you know, a lot of the tension and the nasty words that are being spewed around between genders, particularly Black men to Black women, but we wanted to take a step back from all of that and look at the situation through the lens of intersectionality, which we'll talk a lot more about in a second. But basically, we want to talk about why we feel the way we feel about this situation between Megan and Tory through a scholarly lens, which we feel was appropriate for the theme of our podcast, because here in the Absolute Ghetto, we love to highlight Black ingenuity and their innovations in scholarship. So the woman who actually coined the term intersectionality is a Black woman. We are going to just dive into discussing this controversial topic today.
Yeah, well, we want to contribute to a productive conversation, one that contributes to Black liberation, not just for the most privileged members of our community, not just for Black cis heterosexual men, but for all of us. And so that, of course, includes Black cis heterosexual men. It's not a man bashing thing, but it's more of like, how can we be more holistic in our analysis of white supremacy and of how we combat the oppressive structures that we find ourselves in? And so, yeah, we prepared a couple of things for you guys. So just to give you a preview of how we're going to do it. So first, we're going to talk about Miss Kimberly Crenshaw and the theory of intersectionality, kind of give you a little bit of background on that for anyone that's unfamiliar. And then we're going to get into more of the details of the Megan Thee Stallion situation and kind of like how theory informs us why it unfolded the way it unfolded. And then from there, we're going to talk about stratification within Black women, that not all Black women are created equally in this system. And that comes with certain consequences that are worth discussing. And lastly, we will talk about what it means to protect Black women. So yes, we have a full plate for you guys. Hopefully you'll be well nourished. But yeah.
All right, so let's jump right into it. Well, actually, commercial break. All right, so let's get right into talking about the theory of intersectionality. You want to start, Malcolm?
Yeah. So I think it's important. It's always like, I love how things come together. But like when it comes to Black scholarship, just like most Black creativity, it's inspired by community. It's inspired by these traditions of people working together and creating something new. And then it works together. Next generation creates something new from using that old stuff. And so that's kind of how intersectionality comes about, too, because there's strong Black feminist underpinnings that kind of gave Kimberly Crenshaw the language and the framework to be able to produce this widely used theory. And so I wanted to touch on one thing, the Combahee River Collective statement, and one of the quotes. So they say, "We are actively committed to struggling against racial, sexual, heterosexual, and class oppression, and see our particular tasks as the development of integrated analysis and practice based upon the fact that major systems of oppression are interlocking." Almost said intersectionality. So you see, this was almost like 20 years before Kimberly Crenshaw will write her article where she coins the term herself. But you see that it's built on this bedrock of Black feminist scholarship. And so from that, we get Kimberly Crenshaw.
Yeah, so intersectionality, well, the definition that is in Kimberly Crenshaw's 1989 article that introduces this this concept is, it is like the interconnected nature of social categorizations such as race, class, and gender as they apply to a given individual or group, regarded as creating overlapping and interdependent systems of discrimination or disadvantage. So, like, in layman's terms, that basically means people have different identities that they can't take off, you know, and leave to the side. They're always with them. And therefore, we have to analyze situations and phenomenons that we observe in society, whether it's based on individuals or based on groups of people. We have to take into account all these identities to fully understand how these identities may affect the way they're able to, like, move through the world, or the way the world sees them or moves with them and or moves against them. Or we have to take into account all of these things for it to be a holistic analyzation, right?
Exactly. And I, one of the things in the article, so Kimberly Crenshaw is a lawyer, and so she talks about, like, she gives examples of like the real consequences of not considering intersectionality, not considering these intersecting identities. You often hear people talk about, well, are you Black first, are you a woman first? And like, she's basically like, that's not a viable statement to me because I'm a Black woman. And like in the legal, like some of the cases that she analyzed, like there would be like a discrimination suit against a company for racial discrimination. And they'll be like, well, no, we have some Black men over here. And then there will be another discrimination suit for like gender discrimination. They'll be like, no, we have plenty of white women. And who's being left out completely? Black women. And so she was able to detail that in like several cases. And that's what the article, which it will be linked in the show notes, so you could check it out for yourself. But that's kind of like giving you a little taste of like, you know, what she's talking about. She goes into much more detail that I would recommend you reading. So just to give you the flavor of what intersectionality, like what the consequences of not considering intersectionality brings us.
Right, exactly. And another article we pulled was from the company Vox, who did a recent feature on Kimberly Crenshaw. And there they had a quote from her that said, "Intersectionality was a prism to bring light dynamics within discrimination law that weren't being appreciated by the courts. In particular, courts seemed to think that race discrimination was what happened to all Black people across gender, and sex discrimination was what happened to all women. And if that's your framework, of course, what happens to Black women and what happens to other women is going to be difficult to see." So she's really reaffirming like that this is really a framework. I mean, I think it's really relevant to the situation at hand. Because this is a situation that is about to go to court right now. So we'll see what happens with that. But it would be very beneficial for anyone who's involved in the case to take intersectionality into account when they make their decisions. Basically, intersectionality operates as like an observance of like an analysis of power imbalances. So because Megan Thee Stallion is a Black woman, there's a power imbalance there between her and Tory Lanez, who is a Black man. Even though people love to clown him for being short, he's still a Black man. So I think we're gonna move from here into talking about like sort of how everything went down and the different phobias and isms and noirs that
because it was all up in this situation. People showed their ass. Like, we got everything that you could get, and so it's great for analysis, but wish that people had did better. But we're gonna talk about how we can do better. So you kind of gave an introductory description of what happened at the party, so we could start there. So you have, you know, There's guns, shots were fired. Megan Thee Stallion is injured, and it appears to be gunshots, and...
She didn't come out until, like, a couple days later and, like, explain that she received injuries from gunshots and she had surgery. She didn't say who shot her. She didn't really explain much about the situation other than the fact that, I mean, people were even speculating that somebody had, like, put a hit on her. Like, because that's how vague she was.
And that Tory Lanez saved her. Do you remember those were the rumors back in the day?
Oh, right. And then Tory Lanez saved her. Everyone's like, oh, Tory Lanez saved her. But then everything flipped and it was like, then Tory started being quiet for a while and he didn't say anything. And everyone was like, wait a second, if Tory saved her, then why isn't he saying anything? Why has he disappeared? Why did he go to jail for gun possession? Why isn't her best friend Kelsey saying anything? Where's the bodyguard? Everyone's getting confused. Like, everyone's making up their own stories.
But when we were still in the rumor phase, people started to suspect Tory before she came out with a statement.
Oh, yeah. And, people basically, like, people basically convinced that it was him. Like, all the evidence was pointing to it was him.
And while it was still being speculated and Megan hadn't made a statement herself, people concocted this whole story about why Tory shot her. And one of the rumors that I saw abounding on social media, at least the social media I saw, was this idea that, like, Megan was actually a man and Tory had found out and that's why he shot her.
So that was actually, I don't know who made that tweet or wherever it came from, but I know the singer Cameron had, like, come under some fire because he reposted this, like, this tweet or photo or this picture that said Tory Lanez saw that dick and started shooting. And people were just like, okay, what the fuck? This is, like, the most transphobic thing I've ever seen in my life. But so transphobia became a tool to basically convince people that Megan didn't deserve sympathy. Even with full knowledge that she's not a man, just because of her size, how tall she is, and, you know, her facial features and things like that, people would point to different things and sort of be like, oh yeah, like, that's like a man, or she's too tall, or she's too thick and muscly, and the way her jaw and her whatever, or her nose, they'll be like, oh, these are more manly features.
And so it's, like, disgusting on two fronts, because, like, one, you have this policing of Black women's femininity and how they are able to present themselves in the world. And someone had actually posted a thread and they were talking about all of these Black celebrities, Black women celebrities who have been accused of being transgender.
A man. Wendy Williams, Serena Williams, et cetera, et cetera. And it's usually taller, sometimes darker skinned.
Having more Afrocentric features. There's a very Eurocentric understanding of, like, what a feminine face is supposed to look like. And there was also a corollary to the thread. Someone had reposted it, I saw, and they were talking about, like, a lot of the Black women celebrities who they have received facial plastic surgery so that they can appear more of the ideal. Yeah. And so they basically were getting, because that's very common, the transgender for people who are able to access those resources, like, part of, like, the feminizing surgery is that they get their face reconstructed into, like, what is considered a more female face. I'm doing air quotes. And so that's one part of it, which is terrible, because it's like you're policing how Black women are able to express themselves. But the second part of it is that being trans is not a bad thing. Being trans is not some dirty sin that, oh, you need to hide and it is a secret. And and trans women are women.
And, like, the idea that it being revealed that you're a transgender, like,
warrants
violence is justified and warranted and justified in those situations is so pervasive and so harmful to the trans community. And it's more of an example of, like how we mentioned, like, a previous episode, like, how all these, like, isms and phobias are not only harmful to the group that is the target, but it's harmful to everybody, because look at the way that it bleeds into situations and the way it further subjects people to, like, trauma to have to, like, work through because of, like, being attacked by, like, all of these. Megan is not a trans woman, but the fact that, like, they would use their perception of her, like, as a trans woman against her to discredit her pain and her right to be mad and to be upset and to be vulnerable.
Right. And that gets into,
if you know what I'm saying,
the whole issue of Black trans women being murdered at alarming numbers every day. And you hear this language, the same language that this rapper used of, you know, if you find out someone's transgender, then the violence is warranted.
Right. And this is not just in the situation where you bring someone home from the club and y'all are about to maybe do something or something like that. Like, they will use this, like, even like if they see you on the street and you're transgender, like, that warrants violence to some people. You know what I mean? Like, or if they're trying to talk to you outside of a club and they found out you're transgender right outside the club, now that warrants violence to them. Like, you know, it's connected to homophobia because it's like this aversion to anything that's gay. Not like so rigidly straight. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's aversion to any and all things gay, that, you know, that it's an attack on them for trans people to even exist.
Exactly. Exactly. Disgusting. And so that's one thing. And so, and again, we're going to get further into how all of these things are intersected, because, like, there are differences in the experience of cis women and trans women. And there's privilege on the behalf of cis women when it comes to some of these experiences. But, like, cis Black women are not immune to transphobia and the hatred and some of these toxic ideals that are informing transphobia. And so I wanted to, right, to touch on that. So that was one part. So we got to our first ism. So what happens next?
So she gets fed up with things that are happening in the media, people trying to discredit her story. And you could tell that it was getting to her because she would come online all the time and just be like, guys, how the fuck, like, why would I be lying? And then finally she got on live one day and she named Tori as the shooter. So then we get into, let's start with victim blaming. Or do you want to start with massage noir?
They're tied together in this context. Megan came out and she has all of the receipts. She shows, like, the bullet wounds. She talks about going to the doctor. Like, she talks about why she didn't initially report what happened. And that gets into, so yeah, we'll start with massage noir, because that's specifically outlining kind of the violence and oppression that Black women specifically face because of their intersecting identities, because she's experiencing this interpersonal violence because of misogyny, because of this man who is on some BS. Mm-hmm. And he's feeling insecure, whatever the hell is going on with him. So you have that part of it. Mm-hmm. She's dealing with that, which has very, very catastrophic results. And then while being shot, while being injured, while being hurt and scared, you have the police coming. And now she has to face that the police just murder Black people for no reason. Like, that can happen. It doesn't matter how famous she is. And so she doesn't feel safe telling the police what's going on. The police are not heroes to her. And so, like, that was part of the explanation of why it took her so long to come out with this story. Because she didn't want all of that trouble. Because she knew that her life, like, it could make things so much worse for her in a situation that was already so really bad. Difficult. Right.
Yeah, and I feel like that sort of connects back to the idea of interlocking. And so interlocking is sort of this term that used to, like, highlight how different forms of oppression, race, and gender converge. And when all of these identities you have converge, when you walk into rooms, you walk into spaces, then the ways that you have to interact with people can, like, become quite complicated. And in this situation, Megan was in a situation where she had just been assaulted, but because of their presence, she felt the need to behave in a way that may not have even been, like, the most safe for her personally. This could put her at risk. This could damage her credibility, not telling all the details of the incident to the police right away. But she had to make that decision. She had to make that quick decision because she felt it was best for everybody at the time because of everybody's identities in the group we're talking about. We have Black men here. We have Black women here. She had to make a decision, like, for the group. So
it's just a lot of weight that gets put on Black women.
Yeah. It's hard to even talk about this stuff. Malcolm and I have both had so many personal experiences with this kind of stuff that it's like, damn, like, we're okay. Where do I even start? But, we're trying to break it down the best we can. And, like, through the perspective of interlocking, I think you can kind of, like, how people may be able to understand the reason why, like, Megan had to make the decision that she made, even though perhaps it wasn't the best decision. Like, it's up to your own interpretation what the best decision was, but hopefully you can understand why
it was a difficult decision regardless. Yeah, because it's something that, exactly, like, lot of Black women are facing, where you're trying to balance these things, where you are dealing with oppression in your own community, but, like, at the same time, you're not trying to contribute to the oppression of other Black people yourself either. You're juggling these different responsibilities that come at a huge detriment to your own personal safety, health, mental well-being, health, spiritual well-being. Everything. And it's just a lot. Yeah. But yeah, so that misogyny noir, so the story comes out and Twitter and social media starts doing what it does. People just started telling what they thought Tory's side of the story, because, you know, that not having information doesn't stop people from coming up with something. Mm-hmm. And so you have people talking about, there's a different flavor. Like, the transphobia stuff came up again, but then now you have, like, well, Megan was being too loud with him, or Megan was talking about him in a way, or Megan put her hands on him.
I was gonna say that theory was exacerbated by the fact that her mugshot had, like, come out earlier in the year, and then she explained to people that she had been in jail because she got in a physical altercation with her boyfriend, where they were both fighting each other, you know? So people were using that as, you know, oh, you see, like, she has a history of this, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, just, like, coming up with things to
justify her being shot.
Sympathy.
Right.
Yeah, to justify her being shot, which... I don't know how to explain to y'all that, like, there's no reason to ever shoot any unarmed person ever. there's just no reason, you know? So it's like, I mean, even if those had, like, for me, I'm just gonna say this, like, even if they had been true.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, why is that justify her getting shot? But the thing is, like, a lot of times men will feel like women need to be punished for getting out of line and out of their place. Mm-hmm. So it's not about actually matching the energy. Like, you know, if someone throws a few punches at you, you throw a few punches back. It's about, oh, you threw a few punches at me.
I need to now subjugate you so that you know, you know, that you know that you can never come against me in that way, because you are beneath me.
Exactly. Exactly. And it doesn't even have to be physical altercation. It can be, like, her even saying something. I'm not talking about Megan, but, like, any woman at all. Like, saying something a certain way with a certain tone, or saying a certain thing, that'll be justification for extreme violence.
That was on the internet. Some men justifying the situation. I saw it. They were talking about, she was, that's why y'all need to stop talking about people's heights. You might, and I'm like, wait. I had to, that was one of those times I had to put down my phone and, like, just step back, because I was fuming. Like, I could feel my face was hot. Like, I was like, wait a minute. So no. someone caught you short, and you think you could shoot them? That's what we're really doing.
Right.
That's, you really said that out loud. Like, I mean, yeah, that's what y'all talk about, how people look, and you might get shot. That's what you really wanted to say after. And this isn't a hypothetical situation. A woman actually got shot. She could have not been able to walk. She could have died. Like, anything could have happened. And this is what you thought to say.
And we had some big names, you know, perpetuating this idea too. We had 50 Cent, posting up a meme with a Photoshop picture of Tory shooting Megan. It wasn't really that, but it was a meme. And he's like, he's laughing, and it's, and as if it was something that, like, that could be justified, or that she deserved, or it was funny. So that all goes into misogyny noir, and, like, that's another intersectional idea. It's not just her gender, we feel, comes into play here. It's her Blackness as well, because some of the things that we saw being said about her, it would be very unlikely to see these things said about white women, or to feel like it was okay to say that about white women.
Because of that whole idea that, like, oh, Black women, they're too loud, they speak up too much, which all of these are rooted in racism. But, like, I feel like we talked about it in one of our episodes, but, like, it's like, oh, Black women are insubordinate. Like, they're just always trying to cause trouble. And that's where, like, that whole idea of beating them, like, literally people justifying physically assaulting women to make them, quote unquote, behave. It's disgusting. I wasn't surprised to see it, to be honest, but, like, it's still infuriating nonetheless.
So that misogyny noir, like, is something that Megan Thee Stallion, unfortunately, has had to deal with a lot.
And you have all of this craziness unfolding on social media continuously. And then Tory drops an album. He does this live where he's like, I'm about to tell my side of the story. And people were like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to tune in. And I didn't tune into that nonsense because I respect myself.
Yeah.
But he ends up dropping, I find out after the fact that he had dropped this album that is supposed to explain what happened. And he's calling Megan a liar. And he's, yeah. There's a whole.
He pretty much, just like the live he did a week ago or whatever.
He never actually denies that he really did it.
Oh, you didn't know? But no, he never actually denies that he shot a gun or did anything to harm her, but basically just tries to poke holes in her story throughout the whole thing or deflect. Yeah, so Gaslighting 101, it should have been the name of the album, but we, for some reason, he called it Daystar, which is his name, which I guess is pretty much synonymous with Gaslighting 101 at this point, so.
True.
But there was a lot of outrage that he chose to do that, not just because he released an album where he did not take full accountability for his actions, and a lot of people at this point believe that Megan is telling the truth and he did do something to harm her and he's not taking accountability, but also a recent verdict with the Breonna Taylor case had just come out, and it basically said that only one of the officers who was involved with her shooting would be convicted, and mm-hmm. basically he shot into a neighboring apartment with a gun. The officer was charged with wanton endangerment for firing into the neighboring apartment. So people were upset that he would release his album at this time as well, when everyone is sort of fuming over another Black woman who had got shot and had not received justice, and then he drops this album. So it was just like, it was just traumatizing for Black women everywhere, and we wanted no parts of it, so.
Mm-hmm. So with this whole situation, so you have Tory Lanez constantly making these statements and kind of the discussion around that. And it harkens back to a lot of other discussions of Black men who have done harm against other women in general, but specifically Black women, is this idea of like not wanting the Black man to go down. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of gets into this idea of patriarchy, of like that strong Black men are going to be the people who usher Black people into liberation. And so it is imperative that you uphold a certain form of masculinity and men that embody this certain form of masculinity that is protective and authoritative. And you see this type of trend in all types of social movements. It across the board. You see it with the Panthers. You see it with all these other people.
That persona should be protected at all costs, even exactly. if that cost is Black women,
exactly,
or other people.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think another, I'm almost sorry to invoke his name, but with Bill Cosby, like, it was commonly understood that he did this. Like, I didn't even really hear people arguing that he didn't do it. It was more of like,
yeah, no, there are people who argue that he did do it.
There were people. No, there were people for sure. But like, the reason I brought up Bill Cosby is because there was that same sentiment of like that Bill Cosby was this Black male leader in the community that was going to buy NBC.
NBC.
Yeah, he was going to help bring about Black liberation, specifically in the entertainment sphere. And so it's like, it was interesting that even before the expose happened and all the charges were brought to light, that he was seen as this hero. And it has a lot to do with this idea of these Black male messianic figures who are supposed to save us. You know, there's always people saying, mm-hmm. who's going to be our next king? And so it's like, even though no one is expecting Daystar, no one is expecting Tory Lanez to be this Black savior, but he's still important to a certain degree, and definitely more important than Megan in certain people's eyes, because he is a Black man, mm-hmm. and we need to uphold the Black man, especially a straight cishet Black man, you know.
Right.
And so that's
so then we're saying, like, people saying, oh, like, there's a whole like protect Black women movement, and people are like, oh, protect Black men, as a counter statement. It's sort of like the Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, but worse. But anyways,
we don't get there.
They didn't even say all. They just said Black men. Fuck y'all. But anyways, Yeah, so those are a few of the phobias, isms, noirs, and archies that Megan was subjected to. It's not even funny, but it's just like, it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, that like you
know, all the stuff that comes into play. And we felt like intersectionality was a great lens to look at this through, so we could break down how all of these affected her ability to be seen as credible or worthy of sympathy, even in the event that what she's saying is true, which me and Malcolm believe it is, then, you know, she still may not even be deserving of all of her sympathy for being injured in a shooting. So, and there's one other thing I wanted to mention. Mm-hmm. It was like the whole thing when she finally named Tori as her shooter, they will really use anything. It's like they'll jump from ism to noir, and then they jump to codes. Like, so now they're talking about street code.
Anything
to make sure that she don't get her sympathy, we gotta jump to it. So they jump to the street code this time, and they're talking about, oh, Megan's a snitch. But then there's a lot of people who, you know, a lot of like guys saying like, oh, she's a snitch and blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to keep that between y'all and figure it out on your own. But, you know, even after they were criticizing her for not telling the police in the first place and saying that she should have gone to the police, which is what they do to
the same people.
Right, but then you finally name somebody and you blah, 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 and now it's not okay. But
because we have to maintain this misogynoir. Like, we have to make sure that this black woman doesn't think she has too many rights.
Right, but so I actually wanted to bring a quote from, a lot of you may know that he was in the 21 Savage, that his album Savage Mode 2 just came out a couple weeks ago. And in there, Morgan Freeman is actually narrating a lot of interludes and intros, and he's throughout the album. And so in the Snitches and Rats interlude on the album, Morgan Freeman, and this was signed and stamped by 21 Savage, who is, you know, a veteran of the streets, as we know, is ATL. Uh-huh. And so Morgan Freeman says, a regular citizen who reports seeing a crime isn't a snitch or a rat. The criminals were just sloppy. Snitches and rats, not the same thing. Let me break it down to make sure y'all see what I mean. A snitch is someone minding other folks' business to find information they can sell for a price or trade for some other form of compensation. A rat is a trader, a conceiver, planner, or physical participator. He doesn't sell secrets for power or cash. He betrays the trust of his team or his family, hoping to save his own cowardly ass. Ooh. But all that being said,
y'all niggas don't know street code. So what the fuck are you even talking about?
We're seeing this is the street code being laid out right for you by Morgan Freeman, God himself. Excuse me.
Did you do the Trinity?
Yeah, I had to do the Trinity to save myself real quick. But Morgan Freeman, 21 Savage are telling y'all what a snitch and a rat is. And these niggas be trying to cosplay as El Chapo, like they be out here in the trenches. But they don't even know real street code. Like, stop trying to cosplay as El Chapo. Stop trying to act like you, because the real street niggas know that Megan is not a snitch or a rat. She's a victim. And victims are not snitches or rats, okay? So I just wanted to say that.
And that's some whack-ass behavior. Be out here shooting a woman. Let's say the stories are true, and Megan said some quote-unquote disrespectful stuff to him, and then he shot her. Like, that's... You a weak-ass nigga. Like, why did you do that? Like, that's... I don't know how that fits into street code. Like, that doesn't... What the fuck are you doing?
And we didn't even mention the fact that she was walking away, and multiple people, she said this, and multiple other sources said this. Mm-hmm. When she got shot, she had gotten out of the vehicle and she was walking away. So we see black men able to get all this sympathy when they're walking or running away from, you know, a police officer. And of course, in certain circles, they don't get sympathy anyway, but I'm talking about within the black community. Black men, you know, they're walking around with police officers. We think it's completely ridiculous that you would shoot at them. They're not an immediate threat to your life. But for some reason, you know, because Megan may have said or done something that Tori may have taken offense to, even her walking away, that was justification to put her in her place. So that's patriarchy, misogynoir, transphobia, victim blaming, all that. It's all there. It's all
hated.
It's just ridiculous.
It's tired. It's old. And y'all niggas need to do better. All right.
You need to do better.
And with that, we gonna be right back. We're back.
All right, we're back.
And we're about to add a little bit more complexity because intersectionality allows you to be able to apply many different lens when it comes to identity and the weight that those identities bring when it comes to how you navigate the world.
We want to talk about how these oppressive ideals and structures that we touched on, a few of them in our conversation about the incident between Megan and Tory, how they are perpetuated by not only Black men, but also oftentimes Black women, and even Megan herself, and like how this can be damaging to the community as well. So one particular quote that I remember from Megan that had come out a couple years back, I think it was either 2019 or 2018, she basically said that on a radio show interview that she sleeps with her exes between relationships to keep her body count down. And like when the, well, he basically asked her, the interviewer asked her, do you sleep with your exes? And she said, yeah. And like, oh, he was like, why? And she said, oh, like, you know, I can't be having that many bodies, blah, blah, blah. And she sort of like made this face. And I thought that was a very interesting comment because of her personas. Like, as we all know, if you know who Megan Thee Stallion is, her aesthetic is the whole aesthetic. Not just the way she looks and dresses, but her lyrics, what she talks about in her interviews, you know, the way she like talks and carries herself. And she puts on the whole aesthetic, basically like the sex worker aesthetic, which is something that's very highly coveted in the entertainment industry a lot of times and very highly rewarded for a lot of women, especially Black women.
I saw this really good YouTube video from, the channel is called For Harriet. The woman who hosts the channel is Kimberly Foster. And she was kind of talking about kind of the coercive nature of how a lot of Black women are encouraged to carry themselves in the entertainment industry specifically. She was talking about WAP, which Megan and Cardi B, it was Cardi B's song, and Megan was featured. And like how they for sure like completely WAP. Embodied, yes, the whole aesthetic. They were talking about their sexual prowess and it, you know what I mean? The whole aesthetic to
what else?
All the descriptives of all of the things they can do in the bed. Right. And so like in this whole aesthetic, people are still trying to get safety and there's still a degree of danger that comes with the, like, they want the aesthetic, they want the appearance of it. But like, if you are actually deemed as a sex worker, if you are actually deemed as an actual quote unquote hoe, then you are not worthy of protection. You are not worthy of respect. And so it like forces a lot of like Black female entertainers to kind of toe this line where they are very sexual. Like I one of the things I like that she did in one of her videos is that she went through all of like the top hits from like Black women and hip hop and R&B, like across different genres, and like seeing the content, and all of them were like super, like as far as the top hits, not saying this is all the music that Black women make, but as far as popular music that's selling well, all of it was highly sexual, like all of it.
I would say Cardi B herself had even said that, oh, when she released one of her singles, Be Careful, which was about basically wanting a man to do better and treat her better in a relationship, it wasn't as well received as her more sexual music and stuff that's really playing up her body and has a lot of sexual lyrics and provocative videos. So she went back to doing more of the hoe stuff because she felt like that's what sells better. And she was right. It is what sells better. I mean, WAP has gone like, what, 67 times platinum or something like that? I made that up. But it's ridiculously popular. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But when we're talking about like the whole aesthetic, we're literally talking about like an aesthetic that is really based in like a look that prostitutes, a look and a persona that prostitutes literally carry. And that's what is celebrated in popular music. So it benefits them to take on this whole aesthetic, despite the fact that there's a lot of negativity and marginalization of sex workers in the real world, not the like the entertainment world, in the world where you're doing shows and you're getting money for it and all that, you know. It's just interesting that these women who profit very much so off of taking on this persona, you know, still have that internalized misogyny in that and disdain towards what may be considered like qualities that would make them unwifeable, like being a sex worker or being someone who's too promiscuous or even though that's like the image that they put out there, they always have to like remind you in their interviews or like in certain ways.
I'm actually a good girl.
Yeah. And I'm actually wifeable. And I actually, you know, I actually deserve, it's really, I actually like, deserve, I deserve respect. I deserve respect. Right. I deserve respect. And, but because if they feel like, if they feel if they didn't make that clarification, people would not truly
would treat them like actual prostitutes, and prostitutes are not treated well in society. And so it's really interesting. These currents that black women in this sphere have to like navigate of, like, I've heard people talk about, like, there's like this pressure to be hypersexual, and I've talked about it, and I'm going to get into it a little bit more in example, but like there's like this pressure to be hypersexual even if that's not actually your persona. Like, some people, you know, some people are real comfortable with their sexuality, and that's like how they are, feel comfortable presenting themselves. But other people are not as comfortable with that. And it's like this pressure for you to be, to fit into the desires of men, basically, to fit into the confines of patriarchy, where it's like your value as a woman is determined by how useful you are to men. And like for a lot of black women, like in this particular industry, it's like their usefulness to men is like their prowess in sex. But like, they can't be too sexual though. Like, it's not, if you're having sex with a whole bunch of people or whatever else, no, that's not cool. And so actually, I wanted to bring up a legend, Audre Lorde, who has been influential to both of us in like how we think when it comes to black feminism, when it comes to thinking about liberation for black women. And one of the things she brought up
in Sister Outsider.
Yes, in Sister Outsider is the idea of the erotic versus the pornographic. And so this could be semantic-y, like you could define it however you want to, but like to give how she's defining it. So the erotic is kind of, it's like that liberation that you want. It actually is like people expressing and celebrating sexuality on their own terms. And it's not for under the gaze of desirability and trying to like amass power. It's for freedom, versus like the pornographic has to do with trying to fit into this power structure to amass power yourself so that you are not as in danger as like other women. And so I feel like that definitely fits perfectly into this conversation. And I also wanted to bring up kind of to the point of how like a lot of like the sexuality that we see in entertainment is often contrived and not empowering as we want to be let, want to like believe that it is that Little Kim, she was doing an interview and she was talking about like people who know Little Kim's music, it's very sexual. It kind of set the tone for a lot of the female rap that we have now, that's highly successful. But she was talking about like on some of these, like some of her most seminal work, she was highly uncomfortable, and there was like men, like the producers were basically commanding her and telling her how to express her sexuality so that it would sell better. And so it wasn't like, even though it's celebrated in pop culture as like this like female empowerment thing, it's like she felt very disempowered in the creation of the music. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that the music is empowering to other people, I don't want to take that away, but I just wanted to talk about kind of like that dichotomy of like how the artist themselves is being disempowered to give this performance of a coveted type of sexuality that isn't even like how she wants to communicate herself.
Right, exactly.
And so, yeah, there is definitely nuance when it comes to intersectionality. It's not like a matter of like oppression Olympics where it's like, now you have, because you have certain intersecting oppressed identities, that means that you can't be complicit in oppression. That means that you can't be complicit in causing harm to other people. And so it's important to think about that, not so that we can blame other people or like put them down. This segment was not to like talk about how, oh, Megan, you know, isn't doing everything she's supposed to do. It's more of talking about like how pervasive some of these oppressive ideals are and how they inform how we navigate and interact with each other.
Even these women that we may regard as like leaders in the feminist liberation movement and aesthetic, people like Megan, who dresses, you know, in the clothes that she wants and just talks about sex all the time, and but even somebody like Megan is not exempt from, you know, falling victim sometimes to these patriarchal ideals.
So we want to bring it home and talk about how can we protect black women? What does it mean? What does that mean? Protect, like we hear that phrase being, especially with this whole situation unfolding and with the harm that Tory Lanez did, what mm-hmm. does it mean to protect Black women?
Megan had put out an op-ed that talked about why she speaks up for Black women, and in that she talks about how, you know, protect Black women means to her standing up for Black women whose voices are silenced because of her personal experiences with having to deal with this. And we're not going to put all the details of like the situation in here either. We do like a brief overview, but there's a lot of details. If you want to see that, you know, just do a quick Google if you don't know all the details. But we want to think about how we can protect Black women going forward as well, right? Mm-hmm. What is the true meaning? Because what does accountability look like?
Right. There's different ways of going about it. And maybe we will make an assertion on this show, but like I personally struggle with it because like if protecting Black women means upholding patriarchy in a way, and what I mean by that is like we need more good Black men to stop the bad Black men through violence, and that's how we protect Black women. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's true, but like I have questions of like the leaning into violence, because that's I'm a Black man and I have intersecting identities, but like I'm a Black man at the end of the day, and like I feel like that messaging is not as productive. Like I was like the being quick to resort to violence and the whole like protector thing that like is a part of a lot of Black boys' upbringing. I don't know if it's actually conducive to stopping some of the problems. Like it's like I saw a tweet and I feel like it puts it in simplistic terms, but like I feel like it works for this situation where it's like mm-hmm. y'all like she was talking about people always talk about they want like a man who's quick to be violent, but like it's not going to be long before that violence gets turned around on you. Right. And that's what I noticed, like putting yourself in that mindset, because I had to do work to, because I was raised in that, and like I was quick to like be violent. I was quick to think that violence is the way that you resolve situations. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had to like pull myself out of that. And I feel like it allows me to be a better human and to interact with people better. And I feel like there definitely is a need for physical protection. I'm not discounting that, but like I feel like there also needs to be a dismantling of some of the pillars of what masculinity is supposed to be and what it's supposed to look like, because like it just hasn't served a lot of people well, would be my argument. But yeah, no, let's have a discussion. Yeah. I put something down, so I'll let you give your take. Yeah.
I mean, I was gonna like piggyback off of you to say another form of violence me and Malcolm feel is the mass incarceration system, and that sort of brings in a whole nother angle of what it may mean to protect Black women, because through a lens of abolition and abolishing prisons, abolishing the mass incarceration system in the U.S., we don't always want to resort to, you know, putting people in prison for things they have done or things that we feel like are societal ills or things that we feel like they can't be cured from, or they can't come back from, or just a violent person. Mm-hmm. We think there needs to be like a broader view of like of what it means to be held accountable for your actions, and that doesn't always mean prison. So like even though we've said all this stuff in support of Megan and broke all this stuff down, intersectionality, to help us understand why how we view the situation between Megan and Tory, that doesn't necessarily mean that we feel that prison is the best answer to actually resolve this issue and to protect Black women. Because ultimately, that's just more harm perpetuated that doesn't necessarily get to the root of the issue. Like, how can he use his power and his platform to correct or to ameliorate the harm that he's done and to, you know, give a message to Black communities that what he did was harmful, and, you know, how he's going to try to fix what he did and how he feels people can learn from what he did. Like, prison doesn't really solve any of those issues, you see? So it's like kind of complicated. It's kind of complicated, like, even though we're rooting for Megan in terms of, you know, her feeling peace like at the end of this whole situation, right, however it goes, there has to be more productive ways to sort of correct this harm that will not only be beneficial for their situation but will set a precedent and, you know, be an example for Black communities as a whole and the United States as a whole in general. Because if they take a more rehabilitative approach to the situation, then we'll see the results of this, because it's such a high profile case, the results of like their approach be you know, trickle down to, like, you know, smaller governments and smaller courts and smaller situations and people who aren't so famous, because ultimately we're talking about not just Megan and Tory, because yeah, we care about Megan and Tory because they're real people, but we care about them because they're real people. And, like, you know, everybody
and this matters. Happens to a lot of real people.
It happens to a lot of real people, right? So mm-hmm. We just want, like, I feel like when we say protect Black women, We don't have all the answers necessarily, but we know that, you know, the most productive way to do that is by setting an example that is actually productive to rectifying the harms rather than perpetuating a system that has shown to just compound on pain, on mm-hmm. pain, on pain, you know, so.
Right. Because it's like, I'm one thing, and I think it's very important to be critical of some of the actions of Black men. I myself have to be a part of that conversation to be held accountable to a certain extent for being complicit in certain cases, for like when I didn't have the language or I didn't understand certain things. There's just so many things in my own upbringing and the way that people would talk that, like, I would feel uncomfortable with it, but like I wouldn't speak up all the time because I didn't understand all the way. Like, I was just like, it was just the way everyone talked. And you learn as you grow and you surround yourself with more people and greet more, that a lot of these ideals that, like, people told you, oh, like, you know, like the locker room talk and all that other, like, nonsense, like, it's like, it's not, it's very harmful, and it perpetuates harm further. And so it's like, kind of, something that I've learned, though, or that I at least believe to be true, is that I don't think that Black men are inherently more violent. Like, I'm for, like, talking about how Black men commit harm. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. part of, like, there's some group of, like, Black men that are, like, they get mad whenever you mention that Black men commit harm towards our own community. Like, they mm-hmm. feel like that's putting Black men down. That's, like, no, that's nonsense. We do need to talk about that. But I do think in part of the discussion, like, framing it as if, like, Black men are just inherently, like, there's something wrong with them. I just don't think that's, as a social scientist, that's just not how I would think about, like, that's a weird mm-hmm. thought to have. Like, what would be so deficient? And also, how would you think that way without, like, being informed by mm-hmm. white supremacy? Like,
yeah, that's just a white supremacist idea.
Right, but right. And so it's like, a lot of Black men will, that, like,
if you even point out the fact that one of the mm-hmm. top killers of Black women, like, between the ages of 20 to 30 in the U.S. is Black men, which is a true, then they'll take offense to that, you know, even though it's just a fact. But because that is true, it's something that we have to address, you know, because we can't just keep letting our women die, you know, at the hands of Black men, at the hands of people who, like, you know, the Black men will say these are their protectors, but they're killing them. So, you know, what do we do with that? And I mean, personally for me, I feel like it may be difficult, like, as a person who, you know, a quote unquote regular person, maybe you're not, you know, judge, jury, executioner, you're not involved in this situation at all with Megan and Tory, or you feel like you don't have any power to, like, change a lot of these situations or phenomenons in general. But I think that's kind of, like, the purpose of why we wanted to put this episode out and, like, look at it through a lens of intersectionality, because we feel like getting that message out about intersectionality and, like, the more people who are able to look at it through this lens, especially Black men, especially men in general, but Black men especially in this situation, then hopefully, like, you can understand why, you know, the odds were stacked against Megan in so many ways, and also why the odds are stacked against so many women in so many ways. And maybe it'll change mm-hmm. your perspective on, you know, on things that, you know, maybe you've seen in your own friend group or your family, or you'll understand why things may have played out the way they did, or why, you know, a woman may have behaved the way she did, or just, you know, the more people who have a good understanding of intersectionality and, you know, are able to apply it, like, compassionately to situations, then the better, you know. And of course, we want people empowered to have this perspective too, but our communities is really where it starts. And the people who are, you know, who are living in the houses with you and, like, who have the ability to harm you physically, to harm you emotionally, to harm you verbally, and or whatever it may be, those are the people who, like, it needs to definitely start with, because those are the people, like, you know, if anything, it's like we want to mm-hmm. start at the source of the harm. Of course, when, you know, when harm is perpetuated, then of course we have to try to correct it, but, you know, we want to get at the source, and we want to help people to understand, you know,
and
why
we want the go ahead. Yeah, we want whatever policy proposal that we put up, we want whatever action we take as a community to actually address the problem. And that's the problem. Like, all of this, like, fairly violence, oh, we just gonna shoot people back. Oh, we just gonna put all the black men in jail. We still got the problems. Black men are in jail. Like,
let's
so it's like,
let's try to stop the shot from being fired, right?
You right, know? Right.
So then all that stuff.
I think that Sade, she really did a beautiful framing of abolition, which actually, like, a lot of, like, the thinking of abolition and how we think about it now. And so I'm talking about prison abolition. I'm talking about, ultimately, they're talking about state abolition. Mm-hmm. But, like, the abolition movement also is highly informed by feminist scholarship. So to bring it all back full circle, right. And like, because you have these people with intersecting identities who they're realized already know, like, we can't depend on the system and the solutions of the system. One of Audre Lorde's most famous essays about the master's tools, like, we're not going to dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. And so it's like kind of using the same power structures and paradigms to address the same power structure you're trying to change. Like, it doesn't make sense. So basically, I'm simplifying it grossly, but, like, that's what she was getting at. And so I think that, like, we definitely want to give more. So this could segue into a full abolition episode. I feel like we definitely, like, laid it out. But I think that it's great that we did mention that as one of the ways, because we've talked a lot about problems in this episode, which is necessary sometimes. But, like, in thinking about the solution, that doesn't involve relying on the violence of the state anymore, or relying on the violence of patriarchy, because I haven't seen the evidence of that working. I'm sorry. I wish it worked for you. And so it's like, kind of like, how do we address some of these problems in a more efficient and holistic way? Mm. Yeah, so I think we hit everything. Do you got some final words?
One of the best ways that, you know, that you can protect black women is by actually believing them, and just to recognize, on a lot of these situations, women have a lot to lose, and they have then they don't have much to gain. Megan has a lot to lose in the situation, and she does not have much to gain, like, by lying about Tory being her shooter. Like, there's a lot to lose there and not much to gain. Like, what is she gonna gain from Tory Lanez? Let's be honest. Believing black women is one of the first steps that you can take. Just recognizing that even in situations where we weren't there, we don't have video of the situation, maybe we don't have all the evidence that may come out in the future, we don't have every single, you know, piece of the puzzle, and things may be a little bit confusing, but recognizing that when women speak up, they're usually saying these things in earnest. They're usually saying these things, out of a need to say it for their own protection, for the protection of other women. There's no reason to lie on these men. There's really no reason. He can't do nothing for her. They, like, these niggas cannot do nothing for us. Like, they, like, all, like, like, I'm gonna start a rant, but it's like, literally, there's nothing to gain from these niggas. It's nothing.
Right, right.
It's nothing. Only a lot to lose because of the fucking patriarchy. So,
misogyny, yeah, we've covered it.
And not believing women and black women is one of the ways that you can perpetuate harm. You know, just sitting on your couch, you're perpetuating harm, you know? So, if that's something you want to do that can help rectify some of these intersectional issues that we've been talking about this whole episode, just start by believing her. Just start by that. And who knows what may come out in the future. We're not saying that we were 100% there. We know all the details. But because we know, we understand intersectionality, we understand power dynamics between men and women, and we understand, you know, the trends in terms of women reporting abuse and violence, and whether it's sexual or emotional or physical, and we understand that a very, very, very small percentage of those are ever, you know, false accusations, then, you know, we can come to a reasonable conclusion. And we just hope that a lot of people who are listening, who may have been on the fence or may have been on the other side, will consider this and, like, in going forward. And if they really feel like they want to protect black women.
And I would say for everybody, really, but especially for black men, I don't care. You could be queer, you could be whatever. For black men in general, I feel like it's really, really important for us to do that work of self-reflection and start with what Sade said. Start with believing black women and questioning why you are so hell-bent on trying to discredit Black women. Like, start there. But, like, also interrogate, like, your relationship to yourself. Like, think about, like, how you are interacting with other people and think about how you think of yourself. Like, I feel like as you do more, as we all do more of that work of interrogating how we've been brought up in patriarchy and have been fed all of these misogynistic, misogynoir ideas, we'll see that, like, the stuff has not served us well. Like, every day I get on Twitter and I see men complain about paying bills and being providers. And it's like, that's patriarchy. Like, Black feminists are trying to dismantle patriarchy. And you're against Black feminism for whatever reason. So, like, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, a lot of these people... Yeah, just want us to be free too. Like, freeing, like, doing the work to advocate for and protect Black women is going to save you too.
These structures literally harm everybody. Affects men in many negative ways, and affects their ability to move through the world, to express themselves, to live fulfilling lives in many very real ways. And if you do the reading, you'll realize that. And we'll have lots of reading in the show notes. So there's going to be all the articles we mentioned today, all the scholars that we brought up today are going to be in the show notes. So do the reading. You know, sometimes Twitter is not the reading. Sometimes you gotta read.
You know, but Twitter can get you. They can connect you to the reading.
They can connect
so,
you.
Yeah, just take the time. Like, one of the books, and I've only read excerpts, but, like, I will try to dive fully into it. A book, Bell Hooks, which, you know, she's a problematic fave to some people. But she has a book called We Real Cool, Black Men and Masculinity. And she kind of touches on this patriarchal idea and the roles that it subscribes to men is not obtainable for a lot of Black men because it's rooted in oppression and domination. And, like, Black men are just not able to access that in the same way because we're oppressed too. And so it's like, maybe instead of trying so hard to oppress Black women and other Black folks so that, like, our standing looks more like white men, we should unite and overthrow that because it doesn't make sense. I don't know. So that's a good reading to start with. We will have
but I don't know.
I mean, maybe.
Wait, that's what they say? Oh, we always at the end, we gotta say, but I don't really know, though, so we don't get dragged later.
Right. Well, no, I'll stand in that. Let me not say I don't know. I will say with my whole chest that, like, white patriarchy is not going to save us. It's just not. As a social scientist, it's not in the data. Like, it just doesn't make sense. There is no evidence of that working. And so, you know, I believe in doing things that make sense whenever possible. Yeah, just start reading and start talking to people too. That's the other thing. Like, have not Twitter conversations, but, like, sit down and talk to someone. Cause I took this gender and politics class when I was at Howard, and I was getting dragged, and they're like, nope. You need to just listen. And that's what the lesson was. Sometimes you just got to sit down and listen. Don't try to talk back. Don't try to, oh, well, why did... That's in this whole Tory Lanez thing with Megan. Like, trying to talk back and, like, oh, that doesn't make sense in my conception. Well, maybe your conception is impaired because of patriarchy. And so taking that step back and just listening. Yes, I encourage you all in this journey of unlearning patriarchy and misogyny, because I swear it's so freeing. Like, it's a good time. Again, from Twitter, y'all don't like patriarchy either. Y'all are always complaining about it. A lot of y'all do. So I don't know what to tell you.
they be complaining about it, but they really love that shit too. So they hate when it's taking something out of their pockets, but, like, if it's anything else, they good though. But they gotta pay
someone
some money.
Said, I don't remember what it was. They're like, men love being protectors and providers until it's time to protect and provide. It's like, nigga, what did you think?
What did you think was gonna happen?
Those
here?
Words have meanings.
Yeah, words mean things. But anyway,
shout out to Crystal.
All right, so that's the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening to our little breakdown of the whole Megan and Tory debacle. Hashtag protect Black women. Hashtag believe Black women. All that shit. We said everything we need to say. Let's move into the Absolutely Ghetto Org of the week, which is
Black Women Radicals. So Black Women Radicals is a Black feminist advocacy organization dedicated to uplifting and centering Black women's and gender nonconforming and non-binary people's radical political activism. So I encourage you guys to follow them on social media. They have a Twitter account, Instagram account, Facebook account, all that good stuff. We will have it linked.
You're not going to tell them that you know the founder personally?
Yes, I know the founder personally. She is my friend and mentor, Jamie Swift, and she's just been doing amazing work because she started this organization like not too long ago, like a year ago or so. And it's just been incredible. All of the events that she's been able to host and like the different scholars she's been able to uplift and the different ideas she's been able to uplift. And I find myself constantly learning. In addition to just, she just posts like these historical pictures sometimes of Black women doing dope things. And like, it's just a good time all around. Like you mm-hmm. learn and you get empowered and you just see Black joy and beauty. Visit the website at blackwomenradicals.com where they have repository of scholars. They have teach-ins that they do. There's just a lot of different resources that you will be able to access that will get you together. When it comes, if we're talking about doing the reading, they already got the reading together for you. So it's, you'll be good to go.
It's intersectionality central over there.
So much love to Jamie and Black Women Radicals.
Much love to Jamie. Much love to Black Women Radicals. We'll link all their stuff.
That's all that we have for you guys. This was a heavy one. I think this is the heaviest we've done so far.
It wasn't really so funny. We try to be like funny and like joke around when we record and stuff, but it was just a lot of having to get y'all together. I'm sorry, y'all are out of control.
Mm-hmm. And if it's necessary to get us together, if you wanted to drop some other scholarship that you thought would be pertinent to the conversation and would enhance, we encourage you to do that because that's what this space is about.
And actually, we're definitely probably gonna like try to start a little conversation about this on Discord. For anyone who's interesting, so we think if people who listen to us may like have a few things to say, so head to our Discord. You can find that, we'll link it, and it'll be in the it's on our website too, which is up now, www.theabsoluteghetto.com. We blog all of our episodes now, so you can go leave comments there if you want, or just read a summary if you don't have time to listen to an episode right away, all that stuff. So yeah, we'll just make sure you have all the information for you to get your stuff together, do the reading, protect Black women, and support the Absolute Ghetto. It's all going to be in the show notes. Okay.
All right. Thank y'all.
Stay ghetto.
Stay ghetto. This is the Absolute Ghetto.